some empanadas or something. You know, pulled pork. Seafood fra diavolo. Because I don't think Mayfield's going to change his running style. And I don't think he should. A little ice cream.
All right, Buccaneers fans, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is here. Ira Kaufman, he's the king of Newport Richie. Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the water damage whisperer. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. This is the Ira Kaufman podcast coming up on completing our 10th year of this podcast. Unbelievable.
What's the date on that, Stevie?
It's like July 26th. I got to double check. So we got a little time before you head out to Hawaii.
They're going to be an event?
An event for the 10th anniversary podcast?
Be a tent up somewhere and... Can Greg the Cruz come flying in from Costa Rica?
Not for the 10th anniversary podcast, but I do have a couple of ideas for it.
But we will mark it on the podcast, on the particular
absolutely,
podcast.
Yes. It will be a special podcast.
You know what you could do is play the best of Ira. You got to dig 10 years.
I've got a few gems
squirreled
away.
All right.
One that I found recently, which is kind of funny. I was researching something, and I pulled up a podcast we had from 2017. I found a couple of gems in there. But
well,
anyway.
That was early in our relationship over there.
Early, yeah. And you know, you sounded the same. So did Lee. So did I. So
here we go.
If you didn't like us then, you won't like us now. Bill Curry Ford. They've been there 65 years, far more than this podcast.
With July 4th dead ahead. Dead ahead.
July 4th dead ahead. Incredible July 4th savings now at Bill Curry Ford, your family-owned dealership from the Curry family. C-U-R-R-I-E. Get to their website, BillCurryFord.com. Our friend and colleague, Sean Sullivan, our draft guru, he has the gift-wrapped Ira Kaufman discount for you. You can find him through the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's just that simple. And that includes service. That includes body work. Remember, they have mobile service now at your home. They've got coupons for that on the website. They've got still no extra fee. You know, you're going to pay for your service, but they can do a lot of things at your home. They've got their tow truck, and they've got a welcoming family touch for everybody in the Bay Area and beyond. BillCurryFord.com. We all drive Bill Curry Ford vehicles.
So no extra cost for fixing it in your driveway. Not an extra cost.
Mobile service, exactly, at your home. Now, they can't do everything on your driveway, but they can do a lot. You'd be surprised, and I've seen their mobile vans all over the Bay Area. Every time I go to Tampa, I see more of them, so... It's very well received and rightfully so. And you're still getting a top shelf mechanic to your house. BillCurryFord.com and Florida's Elite Restoration, Ira. We'll talk about them later. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Familiarize yourself so you know who to call when you have water damage, mold, fire, flood, storm damage. They are family owned. They cover the whole Bay Area. They've got the Ira Kaufman discount. If you mention Ira when you call 24/7, you'll get $500 back after your free inspection if you need their service and move forward with that. Florida'sElitereStoration.com.
We got to get Sean out to training camp this year, Steve. Think you can talk him into training camp?
He usually goes once or twice.
By the way, Steve, just in passing, I don't want to dwell on it and I don't want to talk about it. But other teams have come out with their plans, and you know, this team's got 8 practices open. This team's got 11 practices open, and here we are in Tampa, stuck on the number 3.
Yeah, like I said, when they all come out, and they're very late this year, I don't know why, but when they all come out, I'll make a list, and we'll see where we actually stand with the Buccaneers. So, Ira, how was your trip to Flagler Beach?
4-day getaway, Steve. Got back today. The highlight, yes, Lee, I frolicked in the Atlantic Ocean. Yes, I did. With our beach chairs, and they're very nice beach chairs because they got a thing where you flip it over your head, and all of a sudden you got shade protection. It's one of the better chairs I've been in, and nobody stole them, Lee.
Nobody stole them,
and I was out there, Lee, with a boogie board out in the Atlantic. The waves weren't bad. There is no video, so don't even ask, DeCamper. There's no video because if you had me getting washed over by a wave, and I had my hat and my sunglasses out there. And the last time I tried that, within 5 minutes of my trip, my glasses were at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. The hat was gone. This time, I managed to hold on to all of them. That probably tells you that the waves weren't so strong. But, Lee, nothing untoward happened. Kept my glasses, kept my hat. Most importantly, kept my chairs.
Most importantly, kept your pants on. That's the most important.
I don't know about that. They dropped down a little bit.
I'm talking about the waves.
I hope you didn't hug a dolphin.
There were no dolphins out there. And by the way, there were 3 crocodile alligator attacks in Central Florida within a week. So
and people wonder why I've never seen one. I don't go where they are.
I think one of them was in Rainbow Springs. And
I don't know.
Springs, Lee. It's up by Dunellen. That's where people go tubing. I think there was a guy snorkeling in there, and he had an encounter with an alligator.
Well, there was a woman who was swimming, and she got chomped on and died.
Yes, she did.
Gave a good meal out there, at least one?
Italian last night.
Tortellini?
No, I'm very proud of what I ordered. Seafood fra diavolo. the clams, the mussels, the calamari, and the shrimp over linguine. Yeah. Anyway, I'm back.
Now, we got stuff to talk about here, but I know you had a little bit of an issue with something Ian Beckles said, the former Buccaneers guard.
God bless Mr. Beckles.
Started for 7 years as a Buccaneers guard. You covered the team all that time. You guys know each other very well.
He makes a lot of good points, usually. He does. And not this time.
And you took issue with him. So he was on the Jay Retcher podcast, and he was talking about how he played with Jeremiah Trotter, Josiah Trotter's father, who
good
was
player. Good player.
Four-time Pro Bowler. Guy was once an All-Pro.
That was a very good Eagles defense. Mm-hmm. He had Brian Dawkins there. Mm-hmm. Hugh Douglas.
Beckles was saying that Jeremiah Trotter was the best straight-line linebacker who's ever played in the NFL.
Blow up the running plays, yeah.
Blow up the running plays. They used him right. Best to ever do that, but he couldn't really run laterally. And he wanted Bucs fans to know that, hey, I watched a little film on his son Josiah, and this guy is not his dad, and he can't play sideline to sideline a little bit. I see him reading plays, being more instinctive than his dad. And he said, I see more Derrick Brooks in him. That's what he said. I see more Derrick Brooks in him rather than just a straight line guy. And you took exception with that.
Well, I take exception because the first thing I see is the headline. First thing I think of is this got to be DeKemper. to get me riled up, it's got to be DeKemper.
But it was
not. And the headline said Derrick Brooks with Trotter. So now I got to read this damn story. And, I got no problem with what he said about Jeremiah Trotter. He was a really good player, inside linebacker, run stuffer. He wasn't a guy that you're going to tell, go out there and cover Warwick Dunn in the flat. He's not going to do that. And so now, I'm five paragraphs down. And I see a quote saying sideline to sideline. Oh, is this Lavonte David?
Yeah.
Over here? In his prime? And, Josiah Trotter's got a lot to prove. Hasn't taken a snap yet, except for
underwear football.
And his reputation, generally speaking, is very good against the run and needs work in his pass coverage. Okay. That doesn't mean he can't be a good player for the Bucs because, quite frankly, Lee, their run defense hasn't been that good the last couple
of years. The Bucs?
The last couple of
years. The defense hasn't been good.
Or the defense. But I don't want to hear sideline to side, and I certainly don't want to hear Derrick Brooks. Never mention Derrick Brooks in the same sentence as a rookie linebacker on the Bucs. They might have called Geno Hayes the next Derrick Brooks way back when. So I don't want to hear it. Whether it's Barrett Rood.
The best play,
I got to laugh out of you for that
The best play I ever, well, it's interesting you would mention him and Beckles in the same conversation. Beckles hated him.
And by the way, Barrett Rood was a guy who ended up, you look at the stat sheet at the end of the year, he's got 143 tackles.
But you couldn't remember
six yards past the line.
Yeah, that's what Eric Beckles, and he wasn't wrong. When you mentioned Geno Hayes, I think the best play he ever made, I don't want to disparage a man who's passed, but he wasn't sober when he did this. Now, what he was drinking, I don't know, or something else. But he was at, I think, the very same place where the Panthers cheerleaders got busy in the John. Not the same night, but the same place. It was after a ball game, like about 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And he did something, and security's like, hey, you got to go. And the first thing he did was he got in a three-point stance and charged the cop and tackled him.
Well, no, he was... The fun part, not that it's fun, because it's very serious business, and people have died from being tased, but they tased Geno Hayes, and it didn't work. And so that was a really fun police report to read. He's at this club, and they tased him, and it didn't work.
Didn't Hayes replace Brooks as the weak side linebacker?
Tried to.
Jermaine Phillips replaced Brooks, and then came
Jermaine
Hayes.
Phillips was the safety.
Yeah.
Well,
they tried to replace him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a lost
cause. The
old
thing about he can play two positions, that drives me crazy, Lee. Yeah. Drives me nuts.
Well, I think he lasted about three or four games and blew out a broken arm.
Yeah, he broke his arm again, sure.
And then Geno Hayes came in.
All right, Sage, so you got that off your chest.
Did he also weigh in on Graham Barton a little bit?
He weighed in on Graham Barton. He said Graham Barton is serviceable. He wouldn't call him better than serviceable.
He said his play slipped a little last year.
No, he just said he's serviceable. He says he thinks all the other Bucks offensive linemen are better than serviceable, and that Graham is just fine. You can win a Super Bowl with Graham Barton. But, however, Beckles said he gushed and gushed and gushed that Barton is just an unbelievable football player for what he did last year, playing three games left tackle and being adequate at that. It's just blew Beckles' mind. But he's not going to call him anything more than serviceable at center. And I'll throw it out there, Ira, that if he's only serviceable, and that's what we see this year, man, you choked out a first-round pick on a center that you could have gotten in the second round, third round, on a serviceable guy. That's not good.
That's not a great word, Lee, serviceable. It's like, hey, he's the best we got till we can replace him, the old Tomlin line. And I see, Lee, some of the people on that story, some of the fans that commented, talked about they thought Bredesen was better at center than Barton was, and that Barton should be shifted to left guard. I guess that's a dead issue. It's a dead issue.
Well, it's a dead issue. I don't think he's a guard. I'll say this about Barton. You know, people are going to whine about his play last year. He got zero help. He had garbage for guards on both sides of him. I can't remember what game it was, but I'll never forget the play. The guards were nowhere to be seen, and Barton was double-teamed, and he literally had one forearm on each defender, holding them back. It was like an old-school 1970s when they told you to block with your forearms. That's what he was doing out of desperation. And I thought, that play right there showed something to me, that he took on a double-team and with one arm. Each guy had one arm, and he took them on and beat him.
Barton's a guy I think we should be looking at in training camp and early in the season to see how he performs, assuming that the two guards are healthy, and then see what his play is like. I'm not down on Barton, but I think he had a little bit of a subpar year last year.
Last week he was out in Arizona working with A.Q. Shipley, former Bucks assistant line coach, former Bucks center, and he did a yeoman's job when he came in against the Rams and stonewalled Aaron Donald, of all people. If I remember correctly, they moved Ali Marpet had a concussion.
2020.
Yeah, missed two games. They moved Ryan Jensen to left guard. They brought A.Q. Shipley in to play center, and he shut out Donald. Donald had a goose egg that night, which is...
Donald in his prime.
That's a hell of an accomplishment. Wow. A Hall of Famer.
Shipley's now on the broadcast team for the Arizona Cardinals. He was actually at the game in Tampa last year. He's also working for ESPN with Pat McAfee, but he trained for years. He may still be doing it every year. Robert Hainsey.
Yes.
Shipley was Hainsey's personal tutor. And, some might argue Hainsey sucked.
Apparently, Hainsey made great strides with the Liam Cohn and Jacksonville.
Sure.
But he got the job done as a starter out there.
Here's what was funny. You're talking about Shipley being his tutor. There was a episode of Pat McAfee's show when A.Q. Shipley was in the studio, but Hainsey was working out under the tutelage of Shipley. Now, Ira, I'm sure, wait a minute. Pat McAfee's in Indianapolis, and Hainsey's wherever. How could he be working? It's called Zoom. And they piped in the streaming Zoom on the show, and Shipley's yelling at him, you got to do this, you got to do that. Oh, okay.
So the thing, though, Barton, Ira, look, there was a little bit of controversy when Barton was selected because a lot of fans, not all, said, hey, you don't draft a center that high in the first round because you don't need to. You can get good centers afterwards, and that good centers did come afterwards in that draft in 2024. But before that draft, we pulled the numbers, and it was over 90% that a center drafted in the first round is going to be a hit. You know, it's like a slam dunk. You draft a center in round one, you got a 90% chance of the guy being a long-term starter, Pro Bowler, whatever. So
there's a caveat to that.
So the big thing is, I think, for the big picture, is he going to be a Pro Bowl center who gets a second contract and plays 8-10 years.
Lee, let's be fair. He was part of an elite offensive line in 2024. And
as a rookie.
As a rookie. And we certainly didn't think of him as necessarily he's the weak link.
No, people screamed about Bredesen. They weren't screaming about Barton.
Yeah. So I think Barton will bounce back.
There's a caveat to what Steve said. You draft the center first round, slam dunk. Remember, Barton was not a center.
Sure.
He was left tackle.
Sure. He did play a little center in college, and... but yeah, it is important to make the distinction.
Hainsey was the guy that didn't play center, right? At all.
I think he played center at Notre Dame for a while.
No, no. Right tackle.
Yeah, all right tackle.
Dave, you got 4 weeks left on your prediction that Mayfield will have a contract extension before training camp. How are you feeling about it right now, my friend?
I feel fine about it, Ira. Again, we've talked about this so many ways.
Well, Mayfield was asked again about it the other day.
I brought it up because I was going to bring that up. So Mayfield was asked about it. He was in Norman, Oklahoma, where, of course, he played and made a second home for himself. And he was talking to the local media out there at his football camp.
He loves all his bros out there, doesn't he, Lee?
What's that?
He loves all his bros out there in Oklahoma.
And he was very jolly, and he was asked about the Bucs contract, and he was upbeat in his tone and, you know, was sort of positive. But he did drop the line, and I think he was really only emphasizing that, hey, I came to Norman, and it became a home for me. And now I'm in Tampa, and I feel at home the same way. And he said, however it works out, I'm still going to live my off seasons in Tampa. And so that was sort of like saying, well, if I'm not playing for the Bucs, I'll still be in Tampa in the off season. That drew a tiny bit of a red flag, but I think he was really just trying to express to these local people that, hey, I love it there as much as I love it here, and I want to stay.
Steve, did he intimate at all that his camp had a counter proposal to the Bucs' offer?
Intimate? What do you mean?
Did he suggest that his agent?
He didn't suggest anything. What did he say, Lee? Use the term. We just got to find middle ground.
Yeah, he said, they want me. I want them. We just have to find middle ground. Yeah. I thought, I'm glad Steve said it was puffery in a sense.
Yeah.
Because it came across very optimistic. I thought it came because, hey, we just got to find a middle ground. I want to be there. They want me there. We just got to find a middle ground.
I don't think there's any bad feelings at all in this whole situation.
Well, I know some people locally, they took the turn, like you said, you know, I'll spend my off seasons in Tampa. They're like, oh, how dare he say that? And I'm like, it's almost taken out of context to get upset about that.
Oh,
line.
It's in context. I think it's very much in context, but I think he was only trying to share with this local audience, you know, of a bunch of local Norman reporters that, hey, I fell in love with it here, and this is still my home-ish, and Tampa is a great place to have a family, and that's my home now.
Yeah, I just took the whole thing as in my interpretation, it was quite positive because he said, you know, they want me, I want them, we just got to find a middle ground.
I don't think Bowles Light and the Glazers have lost any real substantial shred of confidence in Baker Mayfield.
Well, Steve, why don't you you talk to Joel Glazer on the record.
Only one answer to that question, Ira, and it's not even something to discuss. They offered him a contract extension 3 weeks ago. So,
but in the view of Mayfield and his agent, it was a low-ball offer.
Yeah, low-ball offer. So
that generally, that's what happens on the first offer. It's a low-ball. When you go to Bill Curry Ford, you're going to buy an F-150. You're going to probably offer $20,000. They'll laugh at you, but that's what you're going to do.
When Isbitz asked me if I wanted to be part of Joe Buck's fan, he gave me a low-ball offer. And I brought my wife in as an agent and took care of it.
So, Sage, if I had to guess, because Mayfield is a guy who wears his emotions on his sleeve, my guess is that they did have some back and forth with the Bucs, and they liked the next round of back and forth. They felt good about it, so Mayfield expressed that, hey, we just got to get closer, which is all normal.
If the Glazers tell Light to get this thing done, I mean, yeah.
Well, they obviously did. That's why they said, put this contract in front of him, Jason. Ira, you're talking like you haven't taught me and Lee and everybody listening for 10 years that the Glazers are involved heavily in the major decisions.
Yes.
So the Glazers sat down with Light and said, let's offer Mayfield X amount of years at X amount of money. See what he says. We want him. And Light said, yes, sir, Mr. Glazer, we'll do that right away.
I'm going to hit you with this.
Halfway realizing that Mayfield wasn't going to take that offer?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you this, Ivor. This is Albert Breer's insight. He said the Bucs like to do a lot of extensions during training camp, where Exhibit A. Mayfield has said, once training camp starts, that's it. I'm not talking about it. Not until January.
And you've downplayed that correctly.
Well, I was going to ask you this. Albert Breer said, if the Bucs go to Mayfield, middle of August, and they offer Mayfield what he's looking for, do you really believe he's going to turn it down?
Of course not, Lee. Of course not. I don't remember when they did the Winfield extension or when they did the...
That was springtime, wasn't it?
The McCollum extension.
McCollum was camp.
I keep trying to forget. Now you're reminding me. All right, Ira, this is a unique nugget, a rare unique nugget for us to drop on July 1st. So you know, it's the time of year where I'm catching up on things that I wouldn't normally listen to. And I'm listening to these interviews with this YouTube guy, Mr. Bucks Nation. Usually every offseason he has guys that can't really make the team. He interviews them for a while. And sometimes they drop a nugget about what they're seeing and in mini camp or how they're being treated or whatever. And so he has Connor Bazelak on.
Yeah.
Who?
Connor Bazelak. So
I saw that last week, but I didn't think it was worthy of a story.
Bazelak played last preseason, and he, did okay, I guess, enough to knock Kyle Trask out of orbit.
Is he ticketed for the practice squad?
He was on the practice squad late in the season. They elevated him, and so he was, on the roster late in the season. They brought him back this year. Will he even make the team with the rookie Daniels out of Kansas? Who knows? But he's still there. Jason Light likes him. And so Bazelak says that last year the Bucks started emphasizing to him, hey, Baker's banged up. Bridgewater got smacked around. You're two plays away from taking over this team, and, we need you to be ready. Emphasized. Further emphasized. Okay. And then he got promoted.
How'd Bridgewater get banged up?
Well, he got, apparently, per Bazelak, he got smacked around against the Rams. Which, we saw him get hit a few times, but whatever. So Bazelak says this. He says that late in the season, I was hoping we would just keep winning and winning because the Bucks did talk to me about playing against the Panthers that Week 18 game at home, which would have been awesome to get some experience. Now, I heard that.
I assume that would be they already clinched. If you had already clinched.
Yeah, if they had clinched.
Yeah, yeah.
But not every quarterback rests in Week 18. Maybe that's a window into how banged up Mayfield was, or it's a window into how they looked at Bridgewater against the Rams and saw what I saw and was like, this guy's not ready to play in the National Football League. And they were ready to wash their hands of Bridgewater before last season even ended, because this season I specifically was standing right next to Bowles when he was asked at the combine about Bridgewater, and he didn't blink. They were upgrading and moving on at backup quarterback. So is this a window into anything for you, or just nothing?
Lee, the way I read it, my first instinct, they were hanging on by a thread with Mayfield in terms of his injuries. But the games were important, and they had no faith at all in the backup. Neither did I, and neither did you.
Well, I actually had a little bit.
So they're talking to this guy, get ready for week 18.
This guy.
Meaning if the game's meaningless. If the game's meaningless, we'll get you some experience, and Mayfield will rest up for the postseason.
Well, what about Bridgewater? How's it meaningless for Bridgewater? You want your backup to tune up
playoffs. They saw enough of Bridgewater. They saw enough.
Real quick, I
didn't like the move when they made it.
Real quick, your label of Bazelak, this guy was perfect. That's all. He's a guy. Now,
of course.
If they didn't, and it's pretty obvious now, they didn't. But if the Bucks didn't trust Bridgewater, what the hell was he on the roster for? I'm sure they could have gotten anyone to back up Mayfield if he was that beat up. If they didn't trust Bridgewater when your starting quarterback was playing, barely able to get on the field, I don't understand.
They should have known by the end of training camp and the end of the preseason
that
this guy didn't have it.
No, they should have known. I can't go there, but where I can go is if they made that decision after the Rams game because Bridgewater got pushed around, Teddy, we love you. Go back to high school.
So Lee's saying, why wouldn't they think about playing Bridgewater in game 18 of a meaningless game?
If they trusted him.
I know what Lee's saying. He's sitting right next to me.
That's irresponsible. I'm sorry. I'll get people ticked off at one buck by saying that is irresponsible. That is absolutely irresponsible. That's almost as bad as if the Bucks could have somehow squeezed one of those glorious sixth-round picks and traded for a guard. You can't tell me there wasn't someone on another roster on a contract year, a backup, that had experience. Hey, guys, we're playing.
Once Malk went down for the season.
Not just that. The feces we have on the field for guards, we need someone that's actually taking snaps, showing he can play in the league. If that means we got to cough up a sixth-round pick, do it. So if you're going to ask me what the mindset was of the coaching staff and the front office about the Bucks last year, they weren't serious about a playoff game.
Steve, not having a better backup than Bridgewater might have cost the Bucks a playoff spot last year.
Well, also the guard. I'm going to go back to guard. You throw this Bridgewater news on top of what we saw with the guard. They were not serious about a playoff game last year. You can't tell me they were. Evidence suggests they were not. I had to suggest my ass. They weren't. Otherwise, they would have done something about it.
Have they done enough to upgrade the backup guard situation? I guess they got a rookie.
That's fair. Yeah, yeah.
But they had a rookie last year.
Yeah, that rookie from Notre Dame is going to be solid. I think he's going to be
all
solid.
Right. All right, I'm going to defend the administration here, Ira, but I'm not being devil's advocate.
No.
trade deadline, first week in November, the Bucks thought they were okay at guard. They miscalculated. I don't think they were irresponsible. I think they screwed up. They misevaluated.
Well,
who
that
they
is
had.
Irresponsible if you screw up.
And maybe Mayfield was fairly healthy, but at that time.
Well, fairly healthy, but you know they saw better play out of their guards than most other people.
No,
did.
But I'm saying so. In terms of the backup quarterback.
Now, as far as the Bridgewater thing and with the Bazelak thing I just mentioned, I'll leave it out there that perhaps coaches just told that to Bazelak to keep him pumped up. I might be starting week 18.
Could
I might be.
Be
starting, but
keep him motivated, not get bored.
But if you're a third, but then the flip side of that is, if you're the third string quarterback and you're not motivated, you got a serious problem because your career is hanging by a thread, and he's not like some 35-year-old. But most teams do want in week 18. They're playing their backup, not their third string guy.
You're
playing the backup.
You tell me they couldn't have gone out and got Joe Flacco? The Bengals did. The Bengals couldn't do it. The Bucks sure as hell could have done it.
Yeah.
They miscalculated with Bridgewater. They miscalculated.
They did, but I don't think they ever would have played him. Like, even if he was better, I don't think they would have played him. I think they would have kowtowed to Mayfield saying, I'm the quarterback, I'm healthy enough,
they
I'm ready to go.
They may face the same situation this year in November or December, Lee. They might, because I don't think Mayfield's going to change his running style. And I don't think he should.
Yeah, because
I don't think
right.
he should.
You're right. You're absolutely right. If he changes his style, is he that good of a quarterback? I don't think so.
But with the contract extension that they may, let's say Mayfield does get a 3-year contract extension. So let's say he's booked through 2029. You have a little more pull with your quarterback at that point. Because last year, let's say they pulled Mayfield out and said, you're sitting, Teddy's playing, we need you to get healthy. And they lose. And then Mayfield's cursing up a storm. I was ready to play. This is a bunch of crap. They're making me look like I wasn't ready. And he's pissed off and maybe doesn't like want to stay. He has that in the back of his mind. Now, in 2026, if Mayfield signed through 2029, if he's banged up and they say, Bake, you're sitting for a week. Sorry, buddy. We know this is going to kill you, but you're sitting for a week. He's got no recourse. This is his life, Tampa.
So, Steve, are you suggesting the Bucks were scared of Mayfield?
Maybe. Maybe.
Lee, wouldn't you think that his experience in Cleveland, which ended in the big downer in terms of, you know, playing through injury and this and that, and it really affected him. Having gone through that, Mayfield still wasn't willing to at least harbor a thought of sitting down against Carolina, at Carolina, or against Miami. He's dead set against it.
No, and I'll give you a couple examples. Number one, I just don't think that's his DNA. I don't think he's
wired. Or did he look at Bridgewater and say, hell no?
Well, remember, Mayfield, the last game, 2023 season, at Carolina.
His first year in Tampa.
Yeah, you win or go home. Win or go home. And the week before, he got hurt against New Orleans again in a cheap shot. He couldn't throw the ball that game, the Carolina game. He could not throw the ball. They won 9-0, remember. He couldn't throw the ball, but he was out there. That's him. You know, if I can walk, I'm going to play. And you could have made an argument he shouldn't have been on the field because he couldn't throw the ball. And the only thing he could do really was hand the ball off. And what good of a quarterback? You're basically Trent Dilfer at that point. And so
and Carolina's offense was so badly, they managed to win the game anyway.
Yeah, 9-0.
Sage, if you want to get something done, you got to go to the best, right? That's why they have board-certified surgeons. And they're not just your average surgeon, you're board-certified surgeon. Florida's Elite Restoration, their leadership has worked on the insurance side of the business. They work for insurance companies. They know what to do when you have a claim and a disaster because they know all the tricks from the other side. You got to trust them. That's why they're so successful. That's why they have 5-star Google reviews across the board. They know exactly what has to be done when you have a disaster at your property, fire, flood, mold, storm damage, water damage of any kind is a killer, leads to all kinds of things. You got to address it. If you have mold, you can't just say, oh, well, you know, I'll clean the garage next year. No big deal on the mold. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Call them 24/7. They will answer the phone. They will respond. They've got the best technology.
They're super fast growing, Steve. I'd be surprised if Josh isn't hiring new people just to handle the workload because I think they're going to take over this whole state in this regard.
Are you on top of their finances? You're a very busy man to know the business over there.
It is a fast-growing company, Steve.
Great local company. A lot of family members working there. And they cover the whole Bay Area and beyond. You know, if you're out in Lakeland, Orlando, you got an issue, call them. FloridasElitereStoration.com. And like we said, can't say it enough, these incredible lease offers that are going on now, specifically at Bill Curry Ford, I believe they run through July 6th. So hustle over to the website, BillCurryFord.com. You don't have to wait to get to the dealership. You can start shopping online immediately.
Do yourself a favor on the 4th. Before you shoot off the fireworks, shoot down at Bill Curry Ford.
BillCurryFord.com. All right, Sage, we're not going long on the podcast here. We do have an announcement to make. Friday, noon to 2, we will be on the 95.7 FM WDAE airwaves, filling in for the Nick Wise Show. No, so noon to 2,
hold on.
Live. You can actually call the Sage.
You said 11:30.
Yeah, we got to get you in the building.
Oh, you got to get me in the building.
Yeah.
With a spread in front of me, you know, some empanadas or something, you know, pulled pork, whatever.
Are we back now? All right.
Yeah.
Noon to 2. You can see some details at JoeBucksFan.com, but you'll have a chance to call the Sage live.
Lunch before or lunch after?
Lunch after. We got lunch plans. You know.
Can't eat on the air.
Can't eat on the air.
Ira, come on.
I'm looking forward to it.
Maybe some jelly beans.
Can we take some calls, Steve?
We'll take some fan calls.
And I'm going to get beat up.
I don't think so.
Up to a point.
All right, Sage.
Now, wait a minute. We got to mention that Lee made another trip to Sarasota. He comes back with the Yoder's Bakery.
I didn't say we were leaving. I just said we're going to go coming on the radio.
What a surprise, Lee. What a surprise.
Happy 4th of July.
You know, when you said you were in Southwest Florida, I was driving over here and I was hoping he might have went to Yoder's again.
Went to Sarasota.
Fourth of traffic.
Casual trip. Comes back. Rush hour. Brings us a pie that's
peach pie.
It's about 8 pounds.
Each one's the size of two footballs. Who's eating this at your house, Ira?
Cosmo. Me and my wife.
I could just picture it. Ira's house when he gets home. First thing he does, cuts a healthy slice, puts it on the plate.
A little ice cream?
Well, we're not there yet.
All right.
Pops it in the microwave for 30 seconds.
Excellent
just
idea.
Just get it warm.
Excellent.
Puts a scoop of French vanilla ice cream.
Yep,
French vanilla. And he waits until the ice cream starts melting down on the plate.
Outstanding. While I'm watching the World Cup. It's a beautiful thing.
Have you altered your prediction at all for this Bucks team? You're still at 9 wins.
Am I at 9 wins?
That's where you last were.
I'm at 9 wins, but I also want to say, Lee, you got to put it in perspective. I think they got a better chance of going 6-11 than going 12-5. I'll say that. But I got them at 9.
Do you know Kevin Clark, ESPN?
No.
Really talented guy, really smart guy. Kevin Clark said when you're doing team previews and you have to say if 3 times, you're in trouble.
That's a great line. That's a great line.
You say 3 Fs, you're in trouble.
If they stay healthy, yeah. That's great. Hey, by the way, I got a question for Lee.
Oh, wait, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Remember that. Don't forget that.
All right.
Lee, are you still at 7 wins?
7. Too many question marks for me.
So I'm still at 9. All right, go ahead.
I am interested in this because you come up with this stuff. Give me one or two things you've gleaned so far from this Warren Sharp yearbook. Analysis.
Well, as I told you.
As it pertains to the Bucks.
As I told you the other day, if you strip out the name of the team and you strip out the name of the coach and you just look at the defensive stats, the advanced defensive stats that Sharp dug up on the Bucks the last two seasons.
This is beyond points allowed and yards allowed.
Yeah, yeah.
This is in the weeds.
Yes, yes. If you look at the advanced defensive stats on the Bucks the last 2 years, and strip away the name of the team, strip away the name of the coach, your first question is, where's the coach working these days?
What kind of things, Lee? What kind of things do they stink at?
I mean, I could pull it up, but they stunk at just about everything. Red zone, worst in the league. They blitzed more, just about. Now, I think like 5th most.
That sounds about right.
But they couldn't get to the damn quarterback.
And they couldn't get there.
And so it's like, and what Sharp did not provide, which I was hoping he would, but he didn't. As we all know, if you blitz, that means someone's going to be open. Well, they had all these blitzes that couldn't get home. I would love to see the stats on those plays.
They got to be awful. Got to be awful.
You would think.
What's the most positive thing Sharp said about
the
Bucks?
Well, I haven't gotten through it yet. It took me, it's taken me 3 or 4 days just to get to the end of the defense, and Sharp was just flummoxed how Bowles kept his job.
Is he high on Bane?
He didn't go into Dane because, again, Bane's a rookie, and so he didn't dive into Bane.
Steve, if Bane doesn't make a huge impact, huge, significant impact in 2026, is this defense going to be a lot better?
You've asked me this so many different ways, Ira. Bane represents a massive upgrade.
I'm not arguing with you.
From who he's replacing. So if he's just consistent and gets a little better toward the end of the year, is good against the run, and like I've said, could get 6-7 sacks, but can be more consistent, he's a massive upgrade. Massive. Just like Trotter and Anzalone should be massive upgrades from aging, worn-out Levante David and clueless Servassier Dennis.
And you're saying...
And Trotter doesn't have to be a superstar. He could be Mason Foster, and Anzalone could just be himself. That's huge upgrade.
That's an excellent point.
And you're
point.
Saying Bane, and Bane over Reddick. You're looking at Reddick?
Yeah.
Or Logan Hall.
Bane over Reddick. And I think A'shaun Robinson will be right on Logan Hall's level, a little stronger, different type of player. I think they'll be fine. The question is Jamel Dean. But Jamel Dean missed a lot of time last year. I rewatched the Buffalo game. Out goes Dean with a hip injury earlier in the game against the Patriots. They got Dean off the field because Todd Bowles was trying to get Morrison more snaps. Dean wasn't available the last, got hurt against Miami when they needed him most. He wouldn't have played in week 18. We'll see what happens at corner. That's really the big question mark.
Steve, I'm glad you brought the Buffalo game. The day before Steve had his loaf watch against Buffalo, the day before, I didn't know Steve was going to write about the Buffalo game. The day before, I get a text, and this text is from a guy who played in the SEC, and he played for a College Football Hall of Fame coach. He referenced that very game the day before Steve wrote about it. Here's part of his text. He was talking about, he heard our podcast, and we were talking about quitting. And he's like, I heard the podcast the other day when you guys were talking about defensive players not playing hard. All you need to do is throw on that Buffalo game tape, and there are several glaring examples. That came the day before Steve wrote that story. So we got a lot of comments where people were outraged that Steve would dare write that. The nerve that Steve had. But yet here was a guy who played for an SEC Hall of Fame coach. The day before Steve published that story, said all you need to do is turn on the Buffalo game, and there's glaring examples.
Wait, how can these fans be mad at Isbitz when he's operating off quotes from the Bucks themselves that they quit? Steve's not making stuff up.
Fans want positive news.
I think fans just want news. I don't think.
Well, I mean, there is a sect of, and sometimes a large sect of fans. They don't want to be told the dog crapped in the backyard.
Well, we've been told by people in the organization that
they crapped in the front yard.
That we can get too negative at times.
Oh, I hear that all the time.
As a website.
But they're used to reading Buccaneers.com, where nary will you say a discouraging
even
word.
After a 2-7 collapse.
Yeah,
that's right.
Ira, whenever anybody says that to me, I say, feel free to have this guy call me so I can talk to them and write positive things that I learn about them. Complaints from the team shouldn't matter to any of us, shouldn't matter to anybody covering the Bucks. Otherwise, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Here's what I usually say when I get feedback, you're too negative. So win games.
That ends it.
Yeah.
That ends
Wins
it.
Game, win games.
It doesn't end it. It doesn't end it because how many times have we been critical on a winning team that, a team that went 9-8 and whatever, or a game where they squeaked by and we're blasting it. It doesn't matter. You can be negative after a win. You can be positive after a loss. It just doesn't matter. We're doing what we're doing because we're sharing what we believe and what we observe.
I'll give you an example, Lee, and you took me on, and I understand it. I think I shocked you, but after that Buffalo game, which...
I was out of line. But...
No. I said...
They played good defense.
I said I think the Bucks played a pretty good game. I said that. And Lee goes, what'd you say? And I said
Yeah, I remember that now.
I said special teams were horrible.
Horrible. Yep.
And the defense was lousy. But they did a lot of good things.
Offensively.
They were in the game. They had a lead in the third quarter in Buffalo.
I don't want to spoil it because I've already rewatched now the Rams and the Cardinals. Those are next on the Loaf Watch game.
How could you watch that Rams game?
The Loaf Watch games?
The Rams game was terrible.
Effort. And
one of the worst beatdowns this team's had in years.
You'll see what I have to say about that in the
You're
Cardinals
doing the
game.
Loaf watch game by game?
Yeah, well, every offseason I always watch all the games again anyway. So this year, just with an eyeball on the Loafs. And it's different when you watch them now because you're not angry about a game or ecstatic. You're just studying it as a research project, no emotion.
What was your takeaway from the special teams breakdowns?
Well, we're heading out on this podcast, right? We don't need to
read. Was it laziness? I'm just curious.
Incompetence.
Was it lack of focus?
On the special teams breakdowns?
On the special teams breakdowns? On the coverage breakdowns?
Well, you got Deion Jones out there, one of the guys leading the way, and he's out of football. You got Chris Braswell, who's just soft and more soft. And you got a bunch of guys who just aren't very good on special teams. Josh Hayes, nice special teams player. It would not shock me if he makes the roster. Because I get a feeling he's probably a Danny Smith kind of guy.
Dennis out there running
He wasn't playing special teams because he was a starting middle linebacker. They just not very good, and they weren't making adjustments.
You could argue Dennis was even playing outside linebacker or inside linebacker.
But what I will say is watching those games again, you see really how much having guys like Sterling Shepard, Tez Johnson, Cameron Johnson on the field at receiver really limited the offense. Shepard was probably playing the best he could have possibly played, but he's just limited in his ability. Still
once in a while, he makes a play.
He caught 39 balls and made some good plays last year, no question. Significant plays, but he's playing to his ceiling as an older guy. Tez Johnson.
What's wrong with Tez Johnson?
Watch him play. You're going to yearn for somebody better.
Yeah.
He's limited. Doesn't mean he can't make a good play here and there, but he's limited. Cameron Johnson. These guys are night and day from having a healthy Chris Godwin and Jalen McMillan. So the Bucs, you see how much they kind of suffered from that, even though those guys didn't play terribly.
I still got them at 9 wins right now.
So. I'm sitting at 9, too. All right, we're out of here, Ira. You got a story for, or are we done?
Story? I can't wait to dig into the peach pie.